Hello, this is The Dollop. This is an American history podcast. Each week, I, Dave Anthony, read a story from American history to my friend,
Gareth Reynolds, who has no idea what the topic is about.
God, you want to hit a dude?
I'll do one bump.
People say this is funny.
Not Gary, Gareth.
Dave, okay.
Someone or something is tickling people.
Is it for fun?
And this is not going to become the tickling podcast.
Okay.
You are Queen Fakey of Made Up Town.
All hail Queen Shit of Liesville.
A bunch of religious virgins go to mingle.
And do what?
Pray.
Hi, Gary.
No.
Nicely done, my friend.
No. No.
Right, so show's coming up. I will be March the 9th doing my one-man show, Hothead, at UCB Sunset. Please come. Please. After that, at 8 p.m., I'm downtown at The Lash. Then on the 10th, March 10th, I am at Largo. At 8 with Tom Papa and others, Steve Agee. And then at 9:30, I'm at Blam 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 in Koreatown. Then the 11th through the 14th, I am in San Francisco at the Punchline with Eddie Pepitone. That's going to be awesome. I'll probably be running a lot of my one-man show stuff. So, yeah, get on board. Get on board. Oh, and then tickets are on sale in Melbourne for my show Hothead. You can get those at Ticketmaster or just go to the Melbourne International Comedy Festival site. And then we have the Dollop. We're doing a show on the 18th. Originally, it was going to be at the Joint. We sold out really fast, I think in a minute. So we're moving to the Comics Lounge. The show is still going to be at the same time, Saturday at 3 p.m. If you bought tickets for the Joint on Saturday, you just bring them to the Comics Lounge. They'll be honored. And then there's going to be another 350 tickets that go on sale. You guys already crashed the website when we tried to do it the first time. So hopefully it's up now or in the next day or so. The ticket link will be back up. So just keep checking back on the Comic Lounge website.
Hi, everyone. It's Gareth from The Dollop. Wednesday or tonight, I will be at the Westside Comedy Theater in Santa Monica. Thursday night, I will be doing my taxes at 4:30. And then at 8 p.m., I'll be at the Improv. Uh-huh. March 6th and 7th, I'll be at Comedy on State Street in Madison, Wisconsin. March 13th, I'll be in Ventura with Sam Tripoli. I don't know where that is. And March 31st, I'll be at Flappers in Burbank.
Flappity flap flap. Flappers! This is small up, although after all that shit we just fucking laid down.
That was its own small up.
Regular. August 26, 1916. Ralph Nebbes entered the world.
Yep.
Born in Massachusetts, Ralph moved to South San Francisco as a child and grew up in the middle of the Great Depression. Jobs were hard to come by and workers were...
During the Great Depression?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jobs are hard to come by, and workers were easily replaced. Ralph had already lived quite a life by the end of his teen years. At the young age of 19, every job he had been involved in basically had a reckless disregard for his own safety.
Seems like a trend of the time.
Ralph's first knowledge of horses started under the supervision of trainer J.J. Buster Millerick.
Here we go with those names again. This Buster, is the golden age of names.
It really was. That was at the Millerick Brothers Ranch in California. There, horses were trained for rodeo work as well as for the racetrack. Young Ralph's first mount was a trick donkey, trained to put on a show while rodeo clowns attempted to remain astride.
With a donkey? We've really stepped up our rodeo show game.
Yes.
A bunch of clowns running away from a donkey ain't shit.
Running alongside the donkey.
Yeah. We're frolicking with a donkey. People are like, holy shit, this is dangerous.
You see that clown donkey show?
So these people at this point are like, are just hanging onto buildings while they're building them, you know, 1,000 feet in the air with their hands. And then for like a dangerous escape, they're going to watch clowns frolic with donkeys.
Pretty much.
Okay.
It's the 20s, 30s, whatever.
Whatever.
Ralph's ambition was to ride the donkey and his success. He had a goal.
I mean,
goal.
Wow.
The boy had a goal.
God, I would love to set goals so low. Such achievable goals. My goal is to just get on the bus this month.
God damn it, I want to get on that donkey. So Ralph's ambition is to ride the donkey, and his success in doing it brought him to the attention of Millerick, who began training Ralph to ride actual horses.
Okay.
Real things.
Sure.
Sometime later, Ralph was let go from the job. We can assume it was because of his fiery personality that later would serve him well. He was known to drive horses too hard and himself even harder. This earned him the nickname the Portuguese Pepper Pot.
They should just stick with regular names. Their nicknames take away from the luster of their regular names. Wait, the Portuguese Pepper Pot?
Portuguese Pepper Pot. So he's firing.
Catchy.
He's a pot. He's a pot full of peppers.
Yeah.
And he's Portuguese.
And he's Portuguese.
Yeah.
Okay. It'd be great if he wasn't Portuguese.
It'd be really tremendous.
We needed a third P.
It just sounded good. After Millerick had let him go, Ralph found work as a stunt double for actor Frankie Darrow in the film Broadway Bill. The work paid $10 a day, but he got a $200 bonus for taking a fall from the horse at the finish line. Ugh. Where Broadway Bill drops dead after winning the race.
Ah.
A rope was stretched across the track to ensure that the fall was timed correctly.
What the fuck?
And positioned to produce maximum horror.
Oh, so, from the crew.
So, from everybody.
From his wife.
And from everybody alive. So they just put a fucking rope across the finish line, and he just rides a horse into the rope and flies off.
Yeah, literally the clothesline. The invention of the clothesline.
After finishing work on the movie, Ralph went north to Washington State and Long Acres Racetrack in Renton, Washington. Ralph then began to race for the stable of C.B. Cowboy Irwin.
Sure. Just another normal guy hanging out in the time.
Yeah. Irwin had unexpectedly passed away in a car accident. He was one of the Wild West's greatest showmen, though when he died, he weighed around 450 pounds.
His days of riding.
He did like a Buffalo Bill Wild West show, but then apparently he
ate everyone else in it.
He found sausages, and then he's like, you know, I'm just going to get huge.
You know, I think I might step behind the scenes a little bit.
And at some point, the horses were like, just kill me.
Please.
Just kill me.
He's not getting on my fucking back.
He must have just been a giant fat guy who sat in the middle and went, look at the horses riding around me.
All right. Let's take another break.
Everybody, there's a free cube of butter for you to eat under your seats.
All right. And if your butter's been taken, that's on me.
I ate all the butter.
I ate a lot of the seat butter tonight, guys. I'm out of control.
The accident, the car accident was caused by a blowout on a front tire on the car driven by Irwin's son-in-law, Claude Sawyer. So
he probably ate the donut.
So I was thinking the blowout might have been because he was weighing 450 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, CB's widow was trying to run the stable. It was decided that with the big showman gone, they would turn to horse racing, and the stable was moved to Long Acres. There they met Ralph, who was training as a jockey, who was being trained as a jockey by Manny Keller, who was Miss Irwin's other son-in-law.
So he was tiny.
Yeah, he's a little guy.
Okay.
Keller taught Ralph to always to save ground along the rail and reinforce the lesson with a hit from a bullwhip whenever Ralph failed to obey his instructions.
Jesus. So he would he was a horse for a little while?
He would hit the jockey.
Yeah.
He'd smack him.
So he just didn't see the difference between horse and man. He was like, naughty! Faster! Better!
I love that it's a bullwhip.
Yeah. No. I mean, we were a little more vicious, I guess you could say, at this time.
It was... Keller's methods were so effective that hugging the rail became Ralph's signature throughout his riding
hugging
career.
The rail meaning just, like, staying close to the inside?
I assume so, yeah. Yeah. I would assume that's what hugging the rail means. Racing
not
was...
Not just, like, being like, I love you. You're the best. You're the best blockade.
Oh, man, you're a good rail.
God
Come
damn
here.
It, Ralph.
Come here, rail.
Portuguese pepper pot, listen.
Racing was a burgeoning industry because of the public demand and because states were desperate to replace some of the revenue they had lost in the economic downturn. There was very little effective surveillance of races then, so rough riding was pretty commonplace. Racetracks were places where a man who was willing to do whatever it took to win could succeed, which suited Ralph's personality well. Ralph scored the first victory ever of his own, riding Lily O'Lil on July 28, 1934. Within a year, he had become one of the leading jockeys on the West Coast, riding that winter at the newly opened Santa Anita Racetrack and leading the jockey standings at the 1935 Spring Ten Foran meeting. Under the care of trainer Tom Smith, who had rejoined the Irwin stable, the horses were flourishing as well. Everything was set for an outstanding 1935 meeting at Long Acres. A meeting is like a season.
I mean, you could not. The line that everything was just perfect.
It was all lined up for good times.
All right, everybody, hold on to your hats. It's about to happen.
The Seattle Times wrote about Ralph in June of 1935. Nevis is a cocky, confident little youngster. When he mounts a horse, the possibility of failure never enters his mind. He can't see how the horse can possibly lose with him on its back. He seems to impart something of his spirit to his mounts. He is a fearless rider and never hesitates to take a chance. Oblivious of danger to himself, he sometimes leans toward the rough ride.
That sounds like when you have to write your own bio. It's like so uncomfortable. You gotta be like, hey, came up from the ranks. You've seen him on.
Yeah.
It's very up his own ass.
Ralph's riding accomplishments did not come without costs. His reckless style had made him as familiar a presence in the steward's room as on the racetrack.
The steward's room.
So he's getting hurt a lot. And the steward's room is also where the laws are enforced. So,
it's backstage.
Race cops, racetrack cops.
Sure.
Which is my show I'm pitching.
Sure.
Racetrack cops.
Normal time.
So he was always breaking the rules, basically.
Yeah, and then he was getting the shit kicked out of him and back.
Headlines from the Seattle Times that summer trumpeted four winners in a single day for Ralph, while the stories that followed documented a continued series of penalties meted out by the stewards for rough riding. Jockey Ralph Nevis was fined $25 yesterday for rough riding in the third race. The fine brought Nevis's total to $215 for the season.
Whoa.
Giving him the undisputed course record.
So, is he, I mean, I'm picturing like he's riding like a chair. I mean, like, so there, I mean, is he physically?
I don't know, but there's a lot of stuff. And yeah, you can't like hit another horse. Certain things you can't do.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, there's fucking little dirty tricks that they do all the time.
Yeah.
And he was doing every dirty trick in the
book. So, but it's probably, yeah, okay.
Yeah, like you would hit another horse with their.
Yeah, you'd like you'd make your horse run into it, and like cut off another horse.
Or you'd look at another guy and you go.
Yeah, or you'd be like, my horse is gonna fuck your horse.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That would be really illegal. By mid-August, Ralph had the lead not only in the Long Acres standings, but in the national standings as well. This was a first for a rider based at Long Acres. He ended up finishing the year ranked fourth among the nation's jockeys. By number of wins. Among the major races he won were the Renton and Seattle Handicaps and the Tacoma Handicap. So brilliant was Ralph's performance in 1935 that Miss Irwin received a series of offers to purchase his contract. Among them, one from the stable of Mrs. Charles H. Howard. The Howard stable was then being trained by Ralph's old mentor, Buster Millerack. For the moment, though, all the offers were refused, and Ralph remained at the Irwin stables. I think Charles S. Howard, I think they're some famous.
Right.
Like really famous horses.
Okay.
In that time.
I'm just picturing Foxcatcher.
That's a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, it's not. That's Nightcrawler.
Oh.
God, get your screeners.
On May 8th, 1936, Ralph was riding a horse named Fennekins in a race at Bay Meadows.
It feels like the people's names were hilarious and the horses' names were dog shit, which is the total opposite now.
Right.
Yeah.
That's about right.
All right.
At the time, he was in a tight race for the riding title with Johnny Longdon, Jack Westrope, and John Adams. At stake was $500 and a gold watch that Bing Crosby had promised to present to the leading rider. You gonna fucking meet Bing?
Oh, dude.
You gonna get 500 clams?
Get a little bling, meet your Bing, girl.
Ralph was fifth in the race, heading into the first turn behind a wall of four horses. The outside horse broke a leg and, stumbling into the neighboring runner, began a domino effect that brought all four horses down immediately in front of Ralph and Fennekins. Fennekins tripped when she tried to stop, throwing Ralph into the wooden rail, then onto the track, and then Finnegan's fell on top of him.
Ooh.
The silent crowd watched as track physicians raced to attend to an unmoving Ralph Neves. He was quickly removed from the track in a pickup truck and taken to the first aid room. There he was examined by the track doctor and pronounced dead. The Bay Meadows announcer, Oscar Otis, told the crowd, "We regret to inform you that jockey Ralph Neves is dead. Please stand in silent prayer." A close friend of Ralph's, Dr. Horace Stevens, rushed to the track hospital and saw the bloody body laid out on a slab with his toe tagged. Like, they didn't need to tag the toe, because how many dead guys were in the...
Did the tag say Portuguese pepper pot?
But it's not like there were like seven dead jockeys. Like, there's one dead jockey.
All right, guys, gather.
Which one is this?
Hold on, there's a pile. Now listen to me. We're going to go sort it through the pile. We're going to do the color spectrum order, okay?
In a desperate, long-shot attempt to save his friend, Dr. Stevens gave Ralph a shot of adrenaline directly into his heart.
Now hold the fucking phone.
What up, girl?
If this motherfucker... Okay.
Yeah. What?
If he gets Pulp Fictioned...
No, this is the end. That's okay. The end of the story.
Okay.
He waited several minutes, but it appeared to have no effect, and the upset Dr. Stevens left the hospital. Sometime in the next 20 minutes, Ralph sat up, looked around...
What the fuck are you talking about?
And walked out of the first aid room.
Walked out?
Well, there's no one there.
Hey, I got a thirst.
Here what? I go.
What?
He headed across the grandstand toward the jockey
room. Okay, all right. Now, let me just tell you if you're watching this shit, right? Okay?
Uh-huh.
You've just watched the Portuguese Pepper Potts horse land on him and kill him.
Yeah.
You've announced that he's dead, and it's time to stand in silent prayer.
Yeah.
About, I'd say, an hour or so later, you're still at a horse race when you see a zombie jockey sort of walking through like, hey!
Horse. He headed across the grandstand toward the jockey's room.
Is Bing Crosby here?
Wearing nothing but his pants and one boot. Well, they probably didn't know his clothes were. They probably...
Well,
I love that they left one boot on and toe tagged the other one.
Pros. Pros to a T.
When the crowd realized that the shirtless, bloody, toe-tagged man who was staggering across the grandstand area was Ralph Neves, who had been declared dead about a half hour earlier, they rushed towards Ralph. Shock turned to celebration. At one point, Neves recalled later, "I think everyone on the damn track was chasing me." So he's running a runaway from everybody because Sarah was trying to get him.
Well, the people should be a little more respectful of the man who just came up from the dead.
Upon arriving at the jockey's room where his colleagues were conducting a collection for his widow, Ralph demanded to be allowed to ride the rest of his races.
What?
The
amazed, that day?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that day.
I'm not dead now, am I?
Come on.
The amazed stewards refused to let him return to riding until he spent a night in the hospital under observation. The first doctor who attended to him later said to the Associated Press, "Whether Neves was dead depends on what you call death."
Okay.
I call it death.
Well, yeah, when he's dead.
Ralph stayed in the hospital overnight, then left the hospital through a window in his hospital gown the next morning and hailed a cab back to the racetrack.
He birdmanned it.
He rode five races that day.
That day?
The next day.
He died the day before, and then he rode five races the next day. If you told me that he rode five races, that would be impressive.
Yeah, he rode five races.
Did he find his other boot, or was he still one booting?
And he ultimately won the riding title, the $500, and got the gold watch from Bing Crosby.
Wait. Talk about a 24-hour turnaround. He went from fucking dead to being like, "Thank you, Bing. This watch is perfect."
The headline,
so many people to thank, especially the doctor who put that adrenaline into my heart.
Not the guy who toe-tagged me, though.
That guy. And that by guy, the way, where's that boot?
The headline on the story in the San Francisco Chronicle read,
"Craziest shit ever.
Ralph Neves died but lives to ride and win."
Come on. That's when you need the New York Post.
Yeah.
There's way better ones out there.
Yeah, they would have a much better one. Ralph's death is credited with inspiring the improvement of safety standards at racetracks. At the time, a pickup was used to remove Ralph from the racetrack because Bay Meadows had no ambulance available, and he had no money or insurance to pay the hospital. The Jockeys Guild was organized a few years later in response, and later it was ensured that an ambulance was available at the track at all times.
Luxury.
Ralph continued to ride regularly at Long Acres through 1938, though his record was frequently compromised by repeated suspensions. Among the highlights of this period was the stunning upset of Indian Broom. Indian Broom. That's a little offensive. He engineered aboard Primulus in the Seattle Handicap in 1936. Prior to the race, Indian Broom had set a world record at 9 furlongs, defeating 2 Santa Anita Handicap winners, and was considered one of the leading members of that year's classic generation. And fucking Ralph took that bitch down.
Indian Broom.
There was heated competition for the Long Acres riding title in 1937 among Nevis and 2 other jockeys, but Nevis' total would suffer due to suspensions issued by the stewards, and he would finish 3rd. While it raged, however, the battle was not confined exclusively to riding. On one occasion, when Ralph failed to give Alan Gray's horse racing room, Gray met Ralph outside the jockey's quarters, threw a hard right, and dropped Ralph.
Take that, Peppa Pot.
Tiny little jockeys.
Yeah.
In 19...
God, watching that, you'd be like, magic.
In 1938, the final year at which he regularly rode at Long Acres, Ralph actually managed to stay in the good graces of the stewards and won the riding title. In 1939, Ralph finally signed with Howard and was reunited with Tom Smith, his first jockey. His first string jockey. I don't know what a string jockey is.
It's a marionette jockey.
Quote from Bill Shoemaker, "If you tried to get a horse through on the rail with Ralph, you could count on getting crucified. He wouldn't let you through if your horse was last and his was running next to last. I think he did it just to keep in practice." Ralph took a break from riding to serve in the cavalry in World War II.
Jesus Christ, what? I guess that would be an advantage, though. Yeah. All right, Jockey Brigade.
There we go. No, keep with us.
Stay high.
A fall from the horse at Fort Riley, Kansas, resulted in a back injury that bothered him for the rest of his career. Nor was that the last of the serious injuries he would suffer. He was sidelined for several months in 1953 as a result of developing double vision after another spill. And in 1959, he was forced to undergo brain surgery after a fall at Hollywood Park. After the war, Ralph resumed his riding career, mainly at the tracks in California. There he consistently ranked among the leaders and, at one time or another, won all the major races. Nevis was fearless, crazy. You'd never get behind him because he'd never let anybody through. He was a very good rider, but he was wilder than a peach orchard boar.
Which we all know go crazy.
Charlie Whittingham. Peach orchard
boar. Oh, when you've seen a boar in a peach orchard,
oh,
right?
Oh, my God.
They just go bananas.
Yeah, well, they can't reach the peaches.
No, they can't, so but they love them.
Lose their minds.
Yeah, I've always thought that.
It's crazy.
That's why they outlawed letting boars around peaches.
That's right.
Yeah, which is why the expression makes...
Now makes sense.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a great one.
It's good.
In 1957, he had a chance to ride the best horse ever. He wrote that he'd ever ridden and run in the richest race he ever that would offer him another chance at a national recognition. He dieted drastically to make the weight of 105 pounds and then rode Llangollen Farms Cornhusker.
It's just, how are you going to forget that one?
He ran Llangollen's Farm Cornhusker to victory. After coming from a half length in front, Ralph dismounted and said, "Man, leave me some food." Though Ralph never earned a national riding title, he won riding titles at Hollywood, Del Mar, and Golden Gate, in addition to those at Long Acres, Bay Motos, and Ten Fram. When he retired, he was 6th on the all-time list with the number of wins at 3,722. He was inducted into the National Racing Hall of Fame in 1960. His second and final death came on July 2nd, 1995, 59 years after his first. He was 79 years old.
Jesus.
How about that guy?
That guy is like the Rube of jockeys. with the zombie death.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I like him. Jesus,
I love him. I wish that little scamp was here right now. I'd pick him up and hug him, put him in a Bjorn.
God, I love a guy that dies and comes back to life.
But, I mean, Also, you know how that time was, too. Once that story spread, it was like anytime someone died, they were probably just like, give it a whirl. Give it a shot. Jam it in there.
Oh.
The Portuguese pepper pot.
The pepper pot.
Pepper. Yeah. Okay.
There we go.
That was solid.
We did some horse racing.
Yeah.